If I asked you what happened in January 2022 in the world of pro wrestling, you might remember a few things, like WWE scrambling when Roman Reigns got COVID for day one, and Brock Lesnar won the WWE title, then lost it, won the Royal Rumble. You might remember Jon Moxley returning from a rehab stint for alcohol abuse. But what about the first ever Battle of the Belts? Or when the Cody Rhodes free agency drama started? Or when Johnny Knoxville qualified for the Royal Rumble? Or when GCW held their biggest pay-per-view of the year? Or when all of Triple H's guys got released from NXT? A lot happens in a year. And that's why for the second straight year, I begin my 12-episode look back at the year in pro wrestling, month by month. Joining me this week to kick things off is Wrestling Observer Assistant Editor Brian Rose. This is January 2022 in pro wrestling, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Making his successful return, I would say a successful return to the podcast. Brian Rose is back, a fine editor here at WrestlingObserver.com. And BR, welcome back. A lot's happened in the last 10 months or so. A lot's happened in the last week. It just kind of happened.
Yeah, a lot in the last week. And man, I looked at this list and I'm just thinking, like, this is like ancient history. I mean, you look at that, some of this stuff, and it's like, yeah, this Triple H guy, he's out forever.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so, yeah.
Didn't exactly happen that way. A lot changed over the last 10, 11 months.
Yeah, certainly did. So, again, we're looking back at January. This is the kickoff to our year in review series. And I start this in early November because we do one for every single month. And there's so much stuff that happens. It's absolutely crazy how much stuff that happens. So, again, how we do this is I break this. I go through all the different headlines on WrestlingObserver.com. I have a nice export. I went through, for this one, Brian, I went through 460 some odd headlines, I would say, just for January alone. Yeah, yeah, and that's like a light month. We'll put it that way.
January is generally a light month aside from like Royal Rumble.
Right. And if you remember, we go back to the terrible week because of the planning. We launched our brand new website. I was gone on vacation. Yeah. There was Battle of the Belts.
I looked at some of those headlines and I immediately recall that week, which was the week from hell, because on this website we got a new redesign.
Yep.
And then I remember doing that Dynamite, and I don't know what happened, but I was the only one there. And
yep.
There's like six different posts to do, as is with every Dynamite, it seems like. So,
yep.
Yeah, I remember that vividly. More than a lot of this stuff, honestly.
Very true. So we'll go through. So again, I separate this out, WWE, AEW, and so on and so forth. So we'll start with WWE, and we'll kind of go through a few of these. You know, I think, you know, there were two big events that month. Day one, which was the first ever time that WWE had tried that. With a pay-per-view premium live event, whatever you want to call it, on the very first day of the month. And obviously the Royal Rumble later on in the month as well. Two different environments, two different feels, all that stuff. But day one was newsworthy right from the jump because Roman Reigns got the Rona, got the COVID-19.
He was
off day one. And then they decided to make, there was a title match and that Roman Reigns was supposed to be involved in. They made it, they took him out and made a five-way. Brock winning the Raw title. I remember. Is that, I had this in my notes. Was that accurate?
Brock won it wasn't the unified Raw title, the WWE title. Yeah.
WWE title, correct. And then, so that obviously got things off and running. Ridge Holland broke his nose on that show. Phoenix returned on that, setting up her return at the Royal Rumble. And then we flipped to the Royal Rumble, and Bobby Lashley defeated Brock Lesnar for the WWE title, and of course that allowed Brock Lesnar to enter the Rumble later that night and win the Rumble to earn his spot in the WrestleMania main event. Again, at this point, it was kind of like a fait accompli that we were going to get Roman versus Brock again in WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Also on that show, we had Edge and returning Beth Phoenix defeating Miz and Maryse. Ronda Rousey returning, winning the Royal Rumble. Yeah. The WrestleMania sign caught fire at the venue.
I remember that.
Not just once, but twice. Shane McMahon return, and he apparently, I completely forgot about this. He booked the show and the match so badly, he got essentially got fired after the show.
He booked it so like he would look really strong against like Brock Lesnar or something, and people were like, why would you do that?
He was part of the final four, if I remember that. He was like in the mix, and he did not look good. Bad Bunny returned. Yeah. There was lots of female returns on the show. Yeah. So a lot happened between day one and Royal Rumble. Kind of looking at this, what stands out to you?
Probably Shane McMahon getting fired or booking himself like he was like back in 1998 when he's like 50 or something, or probably over 50. And he's going out there and he wanted to get, you know, look strong over Brock Lesnar or something. It's like, yeah, man, I kind of get why you were kind of sent home after that.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm looking at this and it's like, yeah, it pretty much set up the WrestleMania match, which I don't know. Like, I don't want to talk about the WrestleMania match because that's in March or April or whatever. But I you know, the Brock Lesnar thing, it's like, okay. You know, I wasn't entirely excited for Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns again. And then we had it, and then we had it again later in the summer. So it's kind of wearing out its welcome at this point. And I even thought that back in January. So
yeah, and here we are all this time later.
It's the match they won for WrestleMania, and it's the match they made. So whatever.
Yeah, and of course, at the time, this is still the Vince McMahon era and the Bruce Pritchard era, and how things used to be. And that's in going through these different months and looking at some stuff. Yeah. You kind of have that as a little, I won't say an asterisk in my mind, but it's like it's interesting of note to how things have changed. Granted, there's still issues and Raw still feels long, and there's some stuff you kind of scratch your head on, but it's just two different creative regimes.
It's a different creative regime, exactly, because I'm looking at this list and it's like people got cut and they came back, and this Alexa Bliss thing that you put on here about the journey back to Raw, I remember that. Mm-hmm. And I just like, that's not that, I don't think that would happen in today's regime, but yeah, it's two different regimes for sure.
Certainly. So let's go over some, we'll take a chunk here and see what stuff stands out to you. Leading in this, of course, Johnny Knoxville declaring himself for the Royal Rumble and then qualified later on in the month on SmackDown. That was part of the angle between him and Sami Zayn. Drew McIntyre was suffering from neck issues and ended up returning at the Royal Rumble himself. So he was back in action. You mentioned a few minutes ago, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar became official for WrestleMania. And then Lesnar was also added to the Elimination Chamber match as well for February. You mentioned the Alexa Bliss journey back to Raw begins, which people were just kind of groaning about because she was gone for a long time, that whole Fiend thing.
Yeah, because I remember what happened. She had like a meltdown because Charlotte Flair ripped up Lily, and then she was gone for like 3 months.
Yep.
And then she came back, and it's like she's in therapy, and it's like over the next several weeks she like stopped being Lady Fiend. And I guess she was just kind of like in between. I still had Lily, and I think that's what led her for most of the year with that. Just not Lady Fiend, but somewhere in the middle between her last two characters, which, okay, it's better than, you know, seeing her light Randy Orton on fire. And I don't know what happened at that WrestleMania last year where she like
the box, right?
Yeah, the box, and her face was melting like the warrior when Papa Shango put a curse on him. And
yep.
Yeah, I will take that over the Lady Fiend stuff.
Yeah.
So
I'll go over this, keep going this first chunk. Petey Williams was signed as a producer. They announced their return to Saudi Arabia for mid-February with the Elimination Chamber. Newsworthy because, again, early this year, people are still, the whole COVID thing, people are still kind of coming out of that and doing these international tours again and things like that. And finally they're like, all right, we're kind of back to business. Kairi Sane's deal was reported by Dave to be up, but apparently it wasn't. I remember we had to do a retraction on that. That was kind of a weird thing, but eventually she would.
She did leave eventually. Her contract expired eventually.
Exactly. Sasha Banks, remember her? She was out for 6 to 8 weeks due to an injury she suffered. I believe it's on a house show. And then it was a big deal because she appeared on a NCAA college football championship game, the Open for that, which is seen as kind of a good kind of the influence of Nick Khan and pro sports and kind of getting her on some different stuff there. Also, another injury, Xavier Woods tore his plantaris, is what I had here.
Something in his foot, right?
Yeah, and out of action. He was going to be action for 4 or 6 weeks. Alpha Academy during the month won the Raw tag team titles. We started to have some nods of potential call-ups. We had Tommaso Ciampa and, my God, who is Dunn? Why am I forgetting?
Pete Dunn?
Pete Dunn. Jeez, Pete Dunn.
You misspelled Pete Dunn's name.
I did. For the fans at home, they didn't see that. I'll put that in there. They both appeared on Main Event twice, and there was some thought that perhaps they were going to get called up. John Cena was uncommitted for WrestleMania 38, and he felt that the cuts that were made, we'll talk about in a minute, were due to quote unquote defensive hiring, essentially alluding to AEW being competition, that they decided to kind of flood the market, their own market, with signings to keep them away from AEW, and that the cuts were kind of a corrective measure. I forgot about this. Corey Graves was reportedly cleared to return to the ring. That still hasn't happened yet, right?
They kind of like, he did like a 24/7 title spot where he like rolled somebody up.
Yes.
And won the title for like a minute. So I think that's what happened. That's how that story came out.
Yeah. And then didn't do anything the rest of the year. And I don't expect him to.
I don't expect him to either. Hmm. But it is interesting he got cleared. If they ever want to do an angle, I guess they can do one. But
yeah, or if he could be in the Rumble or it's a secret, entrant or something like that. Yeah. You remember this WWE claim? I think this was in the Toronto Star. AEW's quote unquote gory mutilation is a different product than WWE's. Again,
and then they do something like immediately after where it was like very bloody, and everybody called them out on it. I forget what, but I know WWE did that, and then like a week later they did something where there was blood, or some sort of angle where somebody got maimed, and they're like, and everybody was like, you know, you just called out AEW on that stuff. Which, granted, AEW does a lot of blood, and sometimes I think they do too much blood, but. Mm-hmm. You know, WWE just did an angle this week where Natalya got her face busted open and she was bleeding. Yeah. I don't know if that was a work or a shoot, but I mean, they sometimes do angles where people get bloodied up. So, I mean, it was very silly when they said that. I mean, it is true that WWE doesn't do as much blood as AEW. I mean, AEW does barbed wire matches and... I mean, we remember the match with Nick Gage and Chris Jericho where
the pizza
Gage
cutter.
Was slicing, yes, the pizza cutter, and you know they and there's plenty of death matches and stuff, and so I can kind of understand why WWE would kind of take a shot at that. It's probably kind of warranted, but I mean WWE can't be when they have angles like setting people on fire and stuff that's hardly.
Virtuous.
PG.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Virtuous.
Yeah. We had some people getting releases or requesting releases, and also some of those getting denied. Some people were signing. We had Mustafa Ali requesting his release from WWE, and that got denied. Yeah. And he's kind of back in action now as we record this in November.
Yeah,
doesn't seem happy.
No.
Asking Braun how to get fired.
I get why. They kind of just keep treading on him, and I think he's very talented and way better than the push he's getting now. But it's like,
yeah,
I guess he had to come back because they weren't going to release him, and I'm just assuming that he is going out and doing his contract until it expires and he goes somewhere else.
Or if they do cuts next year, they could be one that they're finally just because think about the people they're trying to elevate.
It kind of seems like this new regime wants to push him, but it's kind of like the same thing where he's just losing and getting laid out. And it's like, this is pretty much the Vince McMahon push when he came back first a few months ago. So it's, I don't know, it's always start and stop with him. And it's kind of sad because I think he's way more talented in his push.
Yep. Let's see. So we also had Sami Zayn re-signing a multi-year WWE, which I think a few people were surprised about. And then Brian Kendrick asked for his release. What a year for Brian Kendrick. I completely forgot he existed, yeah, to be honest. And he would eventually get that release, but we'll talk more about that in February. We'll go kind of this next section here. Brie Bella was announced for Fox's Real Dirty Dancing show. I don't even know if the show is on TV. Did it ever aired?
I have no idea. I kind of remember it, but I don't. It kind of just, if it did, it aired once, and I don't think it's coming back. So it didn't leave a mark anywhere. So
nope.
I don't know.
Certainly did not.
I don't think she won. I think I would remember if she won.
Yeah, if I would have done a post on it at some point. Rey Mysterio was revealed to be the cover star of WWE 2K22. Javier Bernal, I had this known here, to debut in 205 Live. I could not pick him out of a lineup, to be honest.
Big Body Javi.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Yeah, on NXT.
Yeah. You guys, you're the NXT voice.
I am the NXT guy because I'm the only one around on Tuesdays. So, I know him. He's there. He's kind of charismatic.
You are to NXT what I am to Impact when it comes to coverage for this website.
There you go. You're a Thursday guy.
Carmella got COVID. Shout out to Ethan Renner here. Trish Stratus is revealed to be starring in a Christmas movie, which he bought, and I believe he's getting a Christmas card from here.
He said something like he was getting a card or something. I'm like, that's nice.
Yeah, very good.
Good for him.
Again, Tommaso Ciampa and Pete Dunne appearing on main event twice during the month. Roderick Strong was set for a SmackDown Dark match. Didn't really turn out that well for him as far as getting called up. Also, LA Knight and Roderick Strong also appeared on main event during the month. And there was some talk about go ahead.
That one was kind of interesting because I remember LA Knight won his dark match and Roderick Strong lost his match. And I remember thinking at the time that Roderick Strong was pretty much doomed.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's kind of been in and out all year and he's kind of injured right now, I guess. And I guess he's out of action. But he's one of those guys who probably is going to benefit a lot from Triple H being in charge. Because it was pretty clear that under the Vince McMahon regime, he was not going to get called up. That was very interesting, I remember. And, of course, the LA Knight stuff, we know what happened there. So,
yeah. So, yeah, backstage spotted at SmackDown with Io Shirai, Dakota Kai, Roderick Strong, and LA Knight. So, some kind of talk about some call-ups there. Jeff Jarrett and Eric Bischoff both appeared on SmackDown.
What a year for him.
Jesus. Jeff Jarrett, man. I could do a whole show on that.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
The kind of year he's had between WWE and being in Ric Flair's last match for right now. And then leaving WWE, he was head of talent head of live events at one point. And
yeah, a VP.
Now he's in AEW.
Yeah, and he also worked a AAA show during the year, too.
And he did that AAA show with the Latin Lover storyline.
Yes.
They, like, laid out Latin Lover or something.
Yeah, and his wife was involved, Karen Angle.
Karen
Jarrett. Yeah.
Slip of the tongue. I instinctively said Karen Angle.
I did too. Eric Bischoff, obviously, you know, he kind of does his thing. Tony Khan. Nick Khan said he was WWE is not actively looking to sell. That was kind of a refrain throughout the course of the year. They were open for business, but again, this is during the Vince running things era, so we'll see. Other business stuff, WB and Disney signing a network deal for Indonesia. Jeff Hardy, who was obviously released in December of 2021, was offered, news leaked that he was offered a return and a Hall of Fame induction. He declined that. Vince McMahon's mother passed away at 101 years old. And then we're just talking about Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle said that WB was talking to him about a short return run. And that's all.
That never developed.
No, I don't think it did. I don't think it did.
The Jeff Hardy thing in hindsight is just a very strange story. Because did we ever really find out what happened that led to his release? I guess he just walked out during a house show and then WWE said you had to go rehab and Jeff Hardy was like, no. And that's, I guess they released him, but then they wanted him back.
Right. And then AEW signed him and he ended up in rehab anyway by the end of the year. Quite a year for him. So that was WWE's January. Well, let's flip to AEW, and really kind of the big news of the month, Brian, was the return of Jon Moxley to AEW and Diamond, and really wrestling in general. He was announced for the World on GCW. We'll talk about that in a minute. But John Moxley returning, and obviously he had spent some time away to be in rehab for alcohol abuse, kind of getting his life straight. And I forgot about these comments that Bully Ray made about him, that when he came back in that promo, and he was just, you know, kind of did this promo. I can't remember what it was, but I remember it being good. And Bully Ray basically, you know, took issue with it, saying he should have apologized to fans and wrestlers.
Or what?
Yeah, and it was just this really weird, kind of forgotten about thing. It was just a weird stance to take. Yeah,
I remember it, and I thought, you know, it's typical. You know, I'm on a radio show. I'm going to say something to get attention, you know, whatever. Bully Ray, yeah. I don't. It's weird. It's something Bully Ray would say and do, so it's not.
Yeah.
I thought the return was good. I remember that return promo, and I thought it was very strong. And Moxley has had a very strong year, so I'm glad he came back and seems to be doing very well coming off of rehab. So he's probably a strong contender for a Wrestler of the Year.
Oh, totally.
So,
yeah.
So totally. Yeah, I mean, he's had a great year.
Yes. Yeah, and coming back, yeah, Renee had to come up with comments. It was just a weird thing to kind of take.
It was a weird thing, but you know, to me, it's like Bully Ray's probably going out there trying to work something, and you know, it's typical Bully Ray. So it's nothing new.
And then the Cody Rhodes free agency drama began. Brian Rose, and we had this news that he was not under contract. There was the match he had to miss at Battle of the Belts because he had COVID. They didn't announce he had COVID. Actually, I think he didn't have COVID, but someone close to him did. I'm not sure if he ever.
Yeah, he went he isolated himself.
Yes, yes. So I think it might have been a family member or something like that, and what have you. But he had to miss the show, and that would end up being an interim title match. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then at Beach Break later in the month, Sammy Guevara won the Undisputed TNT title. It was a ladder match, and that was the last we saw of Cody in AEW. We wouldn't know it until February. But it was.
I remember that the night before, I was like, "Okay, there's no way he's going to leave AEW. Come on." The next day, he's like, "I'm leaving." I'm like, "Oh, well, I was wrong on that."
Yeah, I remember. I think I wrote the post for the website. He made a statement. He and Brandy. But yeah, this whole thing started. I remember when it first came out, and it was just this question of like, no, like you were saying, there's no way. Yeah. Like there's something.
There's
some work or
that.
Something going on here. But then it turned out to be absolutely legit. We learned, you know, some details about it after.
There's some personal reason why he left. I think he said that recently when he was denying that the Young Bucks like tried to force him out or something, which he denied, but he said it was like some sort of personal reason, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And also I guess he just felt it was time, because you know, if you remember, I mean, he was getting these weird responses, and you know, with so many new people coming in, he wasn't exactly like the highlight of each show. Mm-hmm. Like he was in the past, or the focus, as he was in previous months. So when you look at it that way, you can kind of understand why he might be looking to leave. But I mean, he had been such a big part of that company. It was kind of like unfathomable that he would just all of a sudden leave. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty shocking. I was not expecting him to be gone forever once he dropped the title. Also, I think that was the first time where we got the interim title deal.
Yes.
We saw that a lot this year with the interim titles, and they had Tony Khan introduced that, and I kind of don't like it. I'd rather just have somebody be stripped and you know, like the Thunder Rosa situation that you'll get to later in the year, where it's like, you know, you don't even know how long she'll be out. So why are you doing an interim title?
Right.
You know, you might as well just strip people of the title and award them in a match or whatever. I'm not a big fan of the interim titles.
Yep, I would agree with that. So and then another person had a very forgettable year. Jake Atlas was revealed he was signing a full-time deal with AEW, and then injured his knee in the Adam Cole match for those tape for Rampage just like a week later. So his year would obviously get a lot worse. We'll talk about that in future episodes.
Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate. Just constantly he was good when I remember seeing him in PWG, and then the WWE thing happened, and then he goes to AEW and blows out his knee, and then he gets arrested later, and you know, it's not exactly a great last couple of years for him. It's unfortunate.
Not good. Let's see. We had Matt Jackson and Brandon Cutler getting COVID, so they had to miss a few shows. Tony Khan said a dream signing was coming soon. I cannot remember for the life of me who this was.
I can't remember either.
I would have to. I'll figure this out as we go through the months. But Jade Cargill. We're talking about the first week of January, the AEW debuting on TBS. Jade Cargill won the first ever TBS title on that TBS debut show. That was the same show that Jurassic Express took on the Lucha Bros. Jurassic Express picking up the victory and winning the tag team titles. Rey Fénix suffered an arm injury in the loss. If you remember, he went to the outside and he got thrown to a table, arm dislocated and all that. And that was kind of nasty. And then it was later in the month, he said he expected to be back in February. However, that would not be an accurate timetable. Battle of the Belts, which happened right after that. Sammy Guevara defeating Dustin Rhodes for the interim TNT title. Britt Baker defending her title, AEW Women's title at the time against Rio. And Rio hurt her shoulder, what was it? It was her collarbone. She broke her collarbone in the match. Still was able to make her way through. And Ricky Starks defending the FTW title against Matt Sydal in a match everyone remembers. And then we learned that the Fourth Jericho Cruise. Yeah, Fourth Jericho Cruise got postponed to 2023. Let's go over a few of these other ones, get your thoughts. So
I did want to mention with Battle of the Belts. You know, that show got hired to be like this Clash of Champions level program, and I think those shows have fizzled out. I mean, there's some title matches that were pretty good. I remember that Konosuke Takeshita had a really good match against Claudio Castagnoli a few months ago. That was a great match, but like, these shows don't feel important. And I think even in the last show, I can't even tell you what matches were on there, and it did a very bad number. So I'm not feeling these Battle of the Belts show. They need to feel special, and they don't feel special at all.
I think now that if they're going to keep doing the live aspect, there's a chance. Because here's what happens. Title matches, if you know spoilers ahead of time, it really takes out of it. Because title matches, the whole thing is something could change. They need and they still haven't had the world title defended on one of these things yet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they have not.
They have to. That to kind of make them special. My thought was change it from Battle of Belts to make them like contender specials. Like these three matches, these three people or teams are going to get a title shot in the future. I don't know. They aren't really.
So what would differentiate that between
anything, right?
That or Rampage, you know?
Yeah, it really doesn't. I think that's part of the problem. It's just
that's part of the problem.
It's just another hour to give him the week.
Just another hour of content.
Just another hour. Tony Schiavone's 2-year extension was picked up by AEW. Eddie Kingston fractured his orbital bone in a match. It was going to be out for 3 weeks. I think it was a little bit longer than that. Brody King made his anticipated debut in AEW. Leo Rush signed a deal with Universal Music Group and then later became a free agent. That was a whole controversy with essentially calling out Tony Khan for some racist stuff. And there was just an issue, which, you know, kind of been so complimentary of Rush coming in, and it just did not click, and something didn't work, and Rush was not happy.
That seems to be the story with Leo Rush everywhere. He's extremely talented, and he could probably go far, but there's something that just never clicks with him. It never clicked in WWE, never clicked here in AEW. And now he's doing New Japan stuff, and I hope that works out for him because he's talented, and there's matches you can have there that sound really exciting, like him and Hiromu Takahashi. But I don't know. He was also injured for most of the year. Something happened during a PWG show that kind of blew out his shoulder or something, and he was out for a few months. And he just came back now, so we'll see what happens with New Japan. But I don't know. It seems like he also retired at one point during the year and then just came back. Yeah. So,
yeah,
I don't know. His jury's out on him. Seems to be, a weird career.
Let's say Powerhouse Hobbs came out to defend Tony Khan, AEW, against some of the claims from Leo Rush and also from Big Swole as well. There's some things there. I don't actually know if Leo Rush, Actually, I think Leo Rush didn't say anything about implied racism. I think he liked some tweets and it was kind of interpreted that way. So that could have been it. Anyway, it was revealed that Lita, who had recently returned to WWE for a few matches, had talked with AEW and was interested in a program with Britt Baker. Rohit Raju debuted the Dark Tapings, former Impact X Division champion. Rocky Romero had COVID and had to miss the, I believe, the initial reuniting of Roppongi Vice in the ring. Peter Avalon's contract expired. Anthony Ogogo appeared in a Progress show. Danhausen signed a contract.
Whatever happened to Anthony Ogogo? He was pushed hard, and then he just fizzled. I don't even know if he's on TV anymore.
He isn't. So he had to go back for an eye surgery at some point during the year. But then he came back. He wrestled a bunch of dark matches. And then he was part of the fact, and now he's gone again. He had that high profile match against Cody that kind of just
they pushed him early.
They did,
and then he had that match, and I don't think it was good. And then he just fizzled.
Yeah,
they put him with the Factory, and now he's not even with the Factory anymore. I don't know what's going on there.
I think the last time he was, or maybe it's a weird situation there. I don't know, something sums up. Again, the broken collarbone by Rio. AEW Rampage was heading to ITV4, which is a deal over in the UK. And then Frankie Kazarian re-signed a contract as well. So yeah, that was a noteworthy month for AEW. Now we flip to a noteworthy month for NXT and the WWE Performance Center. And kind of so we had releases during the month. We'll get to those in a second. But we had New Year's Evil. And that kicked off with Bron Breakker winning the NXT title. And remember, he was, I think we thought that he was going to beat Ciampa in their first televised match. And that ended up not happening. But he ended up picking up the win at New Year's Evil. Carmelo Hayes unifying the Cruiserweight title and also the North American title, defeating Roddy Strong. And then it was announced that the men's and women's Dusty Classic returned. So yeah, I mean, Bron Breakker, it's been a good year for him. People seem to like him, and he's had a bunch of different matches and things like that. Your thoughts on kind of the year of Bron Breakker, and even Carmelo Hayes, we'll throw him in there too.
Bron Breakker is somebody who got very good very quickly. Like, I remember seeing his first match, and I'm like, okay, well, I see why everybody was talking about him, you know, before he debuted, and he looked great in his first match. And it really is something, how good he is at that level. I mean, I remember watching Halloween Havoc, which was of thumbs in the middle of the show, and he saved that show, and he looked right there next to Ilya Dragunov, who's very good, and JD McDonough, who is also he's fine. And they had like a 4.5 star match, and you know, somebody who's only a year in having that kind of year, it's super impressive, and he's probably going to get a lot of votes for Rookie of the Year. I felt strongly all year that he was a strong contender for that. Then Logan Paul showed up and ended up being like really amazing. So I'm not sure who I would vote for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah,
but he's had a great year. I'm not sure about his main roster prospects. I mean, he'll get called up for sure, but I think the one thing that might hold him back is he's not like an interesting promo. Like, he's still kind of, he's like there with the wrestling. He's ready to be called up now, but the promo stuff, it's fine for NXT. I kind of don't know how he would do on Raw or SmackDown, but I think it'll take time, but yeah. And Carmelo Hayes, everything's there. He's very good. He's a good promo. I thought under the previous regime, he didn't have much of a chance because he was kind of short, but under this new regime, I think he has a much better chance of being called up. He's ready to be called up now. I think that his group with him and, Trick Williams, that's a very strong duo and a very strong gimmick or, you know, association. So I think they should be called up pretty soon. Trick Williams isn't ready to be called up, you know, as a wrestler, but he's very good promo. And Carmelo is fine, but Trick is a lot better. So yeah, I mean, that's a very good act, and they should probably be called up soon. So yeah, both of those guys had a very good year. Yep. Very, very standout.
We had some cuts. We had Steven Regal, or Lord William Regal, rather. Road Dogg, Jesse James, Gabe Sapolsky, and plenty of others were cut from the Performance Center. And Samoa Joe was cut for the second time in 9 months.
Triple H saved him from the first cuts, and then they went and cut NXT.
Yeah. And, I mean, remember, because he relinquished the NXT title initially on essentially just a short video.
Yeah, that was strange.
And then they
he never came back, right?
No.
He was doing, like, talent scouting.
Right.
When NXT 2.0 took over, and, you know, when Triple H kind of, or I don't know if that was before he got very sick, well, that's right. He was, like, right around the same time Triple H got sick, and it was around the same time main roster decided to take over NXT.
Right.
I forget if they coincided or if one happened before the other or what.
When he came back the second time, was that when he was the enforcer for William Regal? Am I making that up in my head?
Yeah.
Okay.
They did that, and then I think they kind of parlayed that into, like, a match with Adam Cole or something, and then he won the title, and then...
Then
2.0 launched, and he got sick or something, and he had to vacate the title, and then he was never seen again on TV.
Yeah, they never really explained it. It was very, very strange.
Yeah.
But as we know, let's see, Road Dogg got rehired, Sapolsky got rehired, and some of the other ones. So, yeah, when the Triple H...
Yeah, all of Triple H's guys that ended up getting fired over the year ended up coming back because Triple H got the big power, you know, head in charge of creative. So,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, it was a whirlwind year for a lot of those guys in NXT.
Walter had his final match in NXT UK and then made his way stateside finally. I think a lot of people were unsure if that would ever happen, but it certainly did. He got a new name, Gunther, and it was initially believed to be Gunther Stark, which is the name of a former Nazi general or commander.
Something like that.
And one Google search could have told people that. That became a controversy, and he never was officially given the Stark name on TV. But that was dropped.
It was, I don't know. I think, and the way they did the name change too was kind of dumb. But like, at that time, they wanted everybody to have a new name. No one has to have their real name. That I think that was the new decree at the time, and so that's what happened. Yeah.
And the rest of this here rounded out the creative team is reported they had a report to the mothership, to Vince and Bruce. There was no kind of working independently. Sky Tuhati, after he had requested his release before all this happened, he said that in an interview that Vince had wanted the PC coaches to look younger, even though they weren't on TV, so they wanted to dye their beards, cut their hair. Very, very strange stuff.
That made no sense.
Yeah.
Classic. I think for sure that had to be like a Vince McMahon thing.
Yep.
100%. Even though it, like, they aren't on TV, it made, like, no sense. Very strange. Very strange as we get to the last months of Vince McMahon's run WWE. And I don't think that's the only thing. I think there are a lot of weird things, especially once he started getting investigated. But that's for July.
Vengeance Day was announced. Odyssey Jones got hurt. It was really he was going to be out until the fall. And then
came back.
Yes. Yeah. And then there was a report that Stand and Deliver was going to be a matinee show during WrestleMania weekend and not its own kind of takeover special night, which again, the Vince, Bruce Pritchard era of NXT was not making a lot of long-term fans of the Black and Gold brand happy, put it that way.
No. And, the matinee shows are, the thing is that, I don't know. I'm not a fan of matinee shows. I wish it was kind of just its own day.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what they want. It feels like there's just too much, you know, and especially during WrestleMania weekend. So, yeah, I'm not sure about matinee shows, but that's what they want.
That's right. I'll skim through Impact results. Some stuff that happened during the month. Rohit Raju, which is a longtime wrestler for them, became a free agent. Matt Stryker, done with the company. Tom Phillips, a.k.a. Tom Hanifan, was in replacing him. Ian Riccoboni.
Big improvement.
That's right. Ian Riccoboni and Bobby Cruz called the Ring of Honor title match at Hard to Kill. Talk about that in a minute. It was revealed that Mickie James is going to be heading to the Royal Rumble to participate that year with the Knockouts title. And it was also learned that the Inspiration turned down a request to be in the Women's Royal Rumble, just choosing that they did not want to go back. A little bit of a surprise there. At Hard to Kill, Tasha Steelz won the Ultimate X match to earn a future title shot. Again, the Inspiration was actually out of the show due to a COVID issue, so that Knockouts Tag Title match was pulled. Speedball Mike Bailey debuted. He had obviously a great 2022 getting on the scene everywhere.
A very great standout year for him.
Yep, back like, in.
Very good matches everywhere, even in, including Impact.
That's right. Finally getting the visa issues cleared up and is made up for lost time and then some. Ring of Honor Faction, Honor No More made their debuts at the show. Charlie Haas debuted and then immediately got hurt in a match with Josh Alexander's first match back.
And then he didn't last long, did he? He only lasted there for a few months.
I think he only had that one match. He may have had two. That was it.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And then PCO signed a contract and Jay White returned to Impact. And the Gorillas of Destiny worked there as well. So the New Japan relationship, big and strong when it comes to Impact Wrestling. It would happen throughout the year. Thoughts on any of the Impact stuff?
Just Mike Bailey had a great year. Mickie James was interesting. She came out that was kind of like a remarkable thing. She came out at the Royal Rumble with Hardcore Country or that song. And she was the Impact Women's Champion. They didn't want to use the Knockout name for whatever reason. And that was something. Kind of saw that later too when WWE mentioned, I think at Crown Jewel, that Carl Anderson's the never open weight champion, New Japan. Mm. So it's kind of amazing because normally it's the WWE universe and no other company exists. But for this year at least, maybe it's a Nick Khan thing. I don't know. But it's like, you know, everybody else is bringing in people from other promotions. So WWE's kind of dipping their toes into that a little bit, even though technically Carl Anderson is under WWE contract, you know, but the Mickie James thing was very interesting. Probably because they didn't have enough. They cut all the women in the last year and they didn't want to bring in anyone for NXT. So they probably had to go and look back for people they cut. And Mickie James was one of them. So.
That's right. All right, let me paint a scenario for you that I'm sure has happened before. You're on your laptop. You want to watch a soccer game. You want to watch a baseball game. You want to watch this. You want to watch this. And you get that annoying pop-up that says it is region-specific and you can't watch it. Isn't that the worst? I've dealt with this before, and I found a solution years ago, and I'm going to give this solution to you right now. NordVPN. That's right. You've heard about VPN services before. Nord is one I have personally used since 2020. And we're now in partnership with them, and I have a great discount for my listeners. If you ever thought about using a service like this, this is the right time to do it. NordVPN.com/F4W. NordVPN.com/F4W. Get a huge discount off your VPN plan, plus 4 months for free, completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to love it. Again, if you've ever thought about a VPN service, right now is the time to do it. Limited time offer. NordVPN.com/F4W, huge discount, great security. You don't have to worry about where you are, and it's awesome. Check them out. Ring of Honor. There was still news about Ring of Honor, even though they were in the first part of their dark period. Again, this is before Tony Khan bought them. It was revealed that Supercard of Honor was going to return in April. That would mark Ring of Honor's return to action. Jonathan Gresham versus Bandido in a winner-take-all match for the ROH title was announced. It was learned that the focus was just going to be on the world tag and women's titles going forward. That would change quite a bit.
Well, to be honest, that was before Tony Khan bought the promotion. So,
yep. Deonna Purrazzo won the Ring of Honor title on Impact TV, if you remember that. And then she defeated Roxy, I believe. And then the Raw Rich women's title, that is. Yeah. And then Ring of Honor announced they were going to have four inductees for their Hall of Fame, and the Briscoes were the first round of inductees there. Obviously, a lot to come with Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird looking back at these now. Yeah.
What a year.
So I'm going to go through this whole new Japan block because I don't follow it as much as you do, as you're very much better aware of this. I'm going to run through those stuff and I'll kind of kick it over to you for thoughts. It was learned that New Japan was finally going to be returning to Access TV for their weekly TV show after a couple of years away. Wrestle Kingdom 16 had Okada defeat Shingo Takagi to win the IWGP World Heavyweight title for the very first time. The winners of the World Tag League in 2021, Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi, defeated the Dangerous Techers, Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr., to win the IWGP Tag Team titles. Evil defeated Tomohiro Ishii to win the NEVER Openweight title. Jeff Cobb got hurt during Wrestle Kingdom 16. Noah invaded. There was this New Japan versus Noah portion of, I believe it was Night 3, if I remember right. Shibata, there was the story that he changed his planned match at Wrestle Kingdom 16 and said, I just do a regular wrestling match, which kind of is
he did.
Yeah. That's what he said.
It was supposed to be like UWF rules, and then that got dropped like very quickly, and they just had like a really hard hitting good match.
Yeah.
And
he and Ren Narita, right?
It was very cool to see Shibata back because he nearly died after that match with Okada in 2017. And he came back and he had a good match with Ren Narita, and he came back last week and he had a good match with Orange Cassidy. So he can still do wrestling matches, and it's still Shibata, so he's still very good. There's always talk about there is talk about him and Bryan Danielson. I hope we see that in 2023. So yeah, as for the rest of this card, yeah, Okada has been champion for most of the year. It's been fun. He's had good matches, but I don't think he's been like the standout guy like he has been in recent years in that company. My thing with New Japan is like, I still watch the big shows, but it's like I don't cover as much as I used to or watch as much as I used to. And I've been watching since 2012, and the thing is, it's just like there's so much other stuff, and a lot of their stuff coincides with my sleep schedule, and it gets hard. It gets hard to watch when there's so much other stuff. And, you know, it kind of makes me think like AEW is the one that kind of like halted their momentum. It's not like they're not running shows anymore. They're running shows a lot of places, but they don't have the momentum they had before AEW.
And I mean, shout out to Shibata for doing all this when his brain was actually taken out. I mean, set on the table next to him.
Yeah, they sat it right there.
Wild AF. Wild AF.
Yeah.
Dome Show was announced, and other tentpole shows, as they call it, were announced for the first half of 2022. New Japan's Strong tapings were announced for WrestleCon. There was a New Beginning USA lineup that started to take shape with Filthy Tom taking on Taylor Rust. Hiroshi Tanahashi renewed his deal with the company. Chris Daniels, Danny Garcia, and Fred Yehi were announced for a Rivals taping, strong taping, but themed with Rivals. Six talents were pulled from shows due to COVID protocols. Several late January shows were actually just canceled altogether due to COVID protocols. Hyper Battle Tour was announced for the first time in 18 years. They're bringing that back. And then the Windy City Riot was announced for Chicago in April. So, yeah, they kind of weird booking throughout the year. Again, I don't watch, but just kind of heard from people. It's kind of a little bit different than the past, but people seem to enjoy Strong here in the States, and they're doing regular stuff there and a bunch of different talent coming in. So they're kind of doing their thing. It's a lot different than it used to be, but they're doing something.
Everything's good. I think the booking could be a lot better. I'm not really looking forward. I can't say that. What's the best way to say this about Okada and Jay White again? It will be very good. It will probably be actually a very great main event at Wrestle Kingdom 17, but still, I think the theme with New Japan in Japan this year is that a lot of the angles and storylines feel kind of stale. And what's helped is over the last few months, new talent's been coming in, like Jonah and others that get to come over thanks to Japan easing their COVID restrictions, so more people are able to come in. We know we're seeing Aussie Open come in. We saw FTR come in the last week. I'm hoping that 2023 is a better year for New Japan than 2022, as it wasn't a bad year by any means. There's plenty of great matches, and I still need to see Will Ospreay and Naito from the most recent show, as Dave really liked that match. I think he said it was like a match of the year contender, which there's been a lot of great matches this year, so I have to kind of see that. But I mean, just that they're doing stuff. New Japan Strong is fine. I've heard good things about New Japan Strong, but it's not really like make a dent anywhere. And they seem to run shows head to head with a lot of other shows, which is kind of weird. But they've had a decent year. Maybe 2023 will be better. I'm kind of hoping, but it's not as strong as it used to, because you know New Japan used to be far and away the best promotion in the world.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say AEW has taken that over, but AEW has pretty much taken a lot of space that New Japan had before AEW.
Right.
And as a result, they're kind of like, they're there and they have a presence in the United States, but it's not as strong as I think it was in like 2018.
Yeah. I mean, when you can
before that,
when you can get your fix of great wrestling on your TV every week,
we see it every week.
There's a certain
AEW.
There's only a certain amount of wrestling that people can watch in a given week, you know? And if, to your point, if it's harder to get outside, or you kind of get your itch scratched watching American based stuff that has a lot of New Japan guys coming in, you know, you can kind of, that would explain a lot, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's go to the final category. So other, this is the junk drawer category. And we kind of kick off with this first section here, a lot of GCW stuff. So we had the World on GCW, which was GCW's biggest pay-per-view they've ever had. This was kind of a beacon to the outside wrestling world. If you haven't checked it out, watch this show. John Moxley retaining his GCW title on the show, defeating Homicide. We had Ruby Soho versus Allie Catch on the show. Matt Cardona versus Joey Janela. That was kind of a clusterfuck, so to speak. Nick Gage returned on the show. This was sold on traditional pay-per-view in addition to streaming. Effie took on Jeff Jarrett. That was a strange match. Leah Rush replaced Jonathan Gresham on the show because Gresham was out of his COVID or injury or something like that. What I remember about the show, it was just my first kind of full GCW show that I watched. It didn't seem as accessible to me as I thought it would be. To me, accessible being like, if you're a first time fan tuning in, there's a couple hooks here, but I didn't come out of it being like, I can't wait to see another GCW show. It just felt like kind of an amped up type thing for GCW fans.
They've had much better shows, and they needed, for their debut on pay-per-view at the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is also their debut at that venue, they needed a really strong show, and I did not think it was a very strong show at all. Not a lot of great matches, a lot of weird booking. The Effie versus Jarrett match was just weird.
Yep.
Match quality wasn't that great. You know, even with GCW, you at least get like one really good match here and there on each card, and that didn't deliver here. I think there was like one good match. I think there was like a Lucha match that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was about
it. But like, they needed a much stronger show to really like accentuate why, you know, we should be paying attention to GCW and all that. But they didn't do that here. And they kind of just strung along for most of the year. I mean, I'm not saying like they had a bad year, but there's actually been like a lot of good matches on GCW. But, you know, they seem to have like a very strong momentum heading into the year. And then the show kind of like, I think the show was a success. I forget like how they did. But the rest of the year, they kind of, you know, they didn't really build on that momentum.
Yeah.
So.
So other news from GCW that month, Chris Dickinson was announced to be returning from an injury at GCW Spring Break Weekend. I believe he dislocated his hip or broke his hip and had targeted a return date. Jeff Jarrett, we just mentioned, he had appeared early in the month at GCW Die for This, kind of a surprise appearance there. And then he was also announced for the Say You Will show, and that was kind of all the build to the world on GCW. Mascar Dorada, former Grand Metalik in WWE, set for his February debut for GCW, and was later announced to be taking on Joey Janela. Dave Prazak and Lufisto were the first announced names for the Indy Hall of Fame that GCW is backing. Later in the year, he had Matt Cardona. It's kind of the weird matches they had to make, like Matt Cardona versus Ricky Morton. They announced Mike Bailey was going to make his debut. They started kind of building towards a two-night, confirming it was going to be two nights of spring break this year. So that was kind of that. We had Jonathan Gresham had COVID, so he's off Bola, and also the world on GCW, so kind of a bummer for him. Terminus announced that they were going to be streaming on Fight TV, and Santana was starting to do more single stuff outside AEW, and was announced that he was going to challenge Jonathan Gresham for the Ring of Honor title.
I like that first show. Yeah. I haven't watched the other shows, but I like that first show.
again, it's wrestling, you know, it's like, yeah. It's good matches and it's hard to stand out, man. It's hard to stand out.
It is hard to stand out.
Speaking of hard to stand out, the NWA.
Oh God. Yeah. They stood out. Right.
Yeah. NWA launching their, all access pass on Fight, adding, I believe 6 more pay-per-views or something, or bring up their total to 6, but they were going to make a bigger effort. I don't know really how much is different as we stand in November, kind of a weird week for them. Kalisto announced that his 2021 battle with COVID nearly ended him. Nick Aldis re-signed with the NWA. How about that?
Yeah.
And then the NWA Crockett Cup was also announced for March as well. So NWA kind of doing their thing. WrestleCon started to take shape. We talked about that a little bit, but again, kind of big news because they were, I think this is their first WrestleCon post-COVID, if I remember right. Impact having a show, AAA announcing a show. Toni Storm was announced that she was going to be wrestling at WrestleCon as well. The Rock and Roll Express announced they were going to do a farewell tour. Feels like that's been going on forever. Stop the presses. Tammy Sitch was arrested, threatened to kill a man with scissors.
Yeah, and this isn't even the really bad one that happens a few months later.
That's right.
And she might get arrested again in between. Maybe she got arrested in February. Who knows? But know. Like, God.
Absolute
man,
mess.
Just really mess. Big
the,
mess.
The Hardy Boys reunited on the indies. Of course, Jeff had not signed with AEW yet. Conan had heart surgery. COVID.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was due to COVID, right?
COVID, and he'd had issues. I believe he had a kidney transplant before.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was like a whole kind of thing with that. It was just kind of all related. But he ended up turning out to be okay. A couple MLW notes. Von Erichs were pulled from MLW Blood and Thunder due to COVID. Buddy Matthews made his debut in the show. We actually lost, which is kind of strange. Bandido debuted for MLW in the middleweight four-way title match. He lost in his debut. Myron Reed regained the title. In that one, they announced that Alex Hammerstone would defend the MLW title against Davey Richard at February's Super Fight in Charlotte. This was interesting. MLW filing the antitrust lawsuit against WWE, claiming that...
Oh, is this the what? Yeah, the one with a Tubi or something?
Yeah, they claim that basically Steph helped kind of crush the deal. And
like Stephanie crushed the deal or something. Like,
because they're, they're owned by Fox, or I think Tubi is owned by Fox or some sort of thing.
Tubi is owned by Fox, yes.
And then there was another thing that they killed, and they said it was because of the Vice deal. Like they were trying to screw with that. And
I think WWE caused them to have 40,000 viewers on their debut show.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it was this still is not settled yet. So I guess we'll
still
see
going on.
See where it goes. Probably, see if it gets settled in 2023. MLW Kings of Coliseum was announced for May in Philadelphia. AAA announced it for their 30th anniversary. They were going to do 3 Triple Mania events for 2022. PWG Bullet, we just mentioned that, returning. Danny Garcia picking up a win over Mike Bailey in the finals. Again, Jonathan Gresham was out due to COVID. Leo Rush injured his shoulder on the show. We're talking about the injuries. And he said he was claiming there was, this is kind of what I was thinking of earlier, claiming the fans had hurt racial slurs and hate speech jab. And I think he said he slipped on a battery, if I remember right. And that's where he got his shoulder hurt.
I remember something about a bad crowd at PWG. I don't remember him slipping on a battery, but maybe. I remember that situation.
It was just bad. And this is, it's crazy because you think of like, PWG is like a super indie. You don't think of them having problems like this, but they had this stuff. There was the transgender person that got beat up in a bathroom.
Oh, I heard. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
it was like,
that was bad.
It's like weird. Like what is, I haven't heard about anything since this stuff. There could be some as we go through all these, but just weird. Like one of the things I didn't expect to see at a PWG show.
I did. I would not have expected something like that at a PWG event.
No,
that's pretty strange.
Ric Flair and Wendy Barstow were done. So, we're allowed to do post on that.
Didn't they get back though?
They might. they might have later.
I don't know.
It's very possible.
It's Ric Flair.
I know.
I did want to say something about Daniel Garcia. He's had like a hell of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's really stood out as a very, very good wrestler. He's had great matches with, and this will be later in the year, but he's had great matches with Bryan Danielson and that role in the Jericho Appreciation Society that has really gotten him over. And he's the pure champion in Ring of Honor, and he's had a very good year. I mean, not like Mike Bailey or maybe somebody else, but he's had a very strong year.
Certainly has.
Really a breakout year for him.
Mojo Rawley returned. He was going to be coming back to the Indies after a really bad battle of COVID he talked about.
Did he go back to Indies?
I think. Was this before he was cut? I'm actually not sure now.
No, he got cut like the year before, but like, has he done a lot of Indies? I know he was a part of that promotion in Europe that floundered very quickly.
Yeah. Maybe this was
Authors of Pain.
Yes. Yes. I think maybe he was announcing he was going to return after a bad battle with COVID. Anyway, so he had a bad battle with COVID. Another GCW note, X-Pac and Joey Janela versus Matt Cardona and Brian Myers was announced for GCW Welcome to Heartbreak. And then Braun Strowman and Eric Redbeard were announced to reunite for a NEW show, Northeast Wrestling. And that was thoughts on anything?
What a year for Braun.
I know.
I mean, like, he gets fired and then he tries to control his narrative and makes a lot of posts that are dumb. Then he gets called back anyway. And, you know, the thing with Braun Strowman is he's not bad. And he kind of saved that almost match last week on Saturday. He's very good. And I think he's one of the better big men in the business. But, like, his tweets and Instagram posts are dumb. And, the control your narrative stuff that floundered. I heard that they were doing touring and then nobody went to the shows and that's kind of all up in the air. So yeah, I mean, that's weird. Well, a weird thing with Braun, but that's Rock and Roll Express. I think they did have their farewell match, didn't they? Or is that still going?
I feel like they haven't had that yet.
Yeah.
It's possible. I guess
because Ricky Morton said he wanted to team with his son. So I guess the Rock and Roll Express aren't going to team up anymore, but they haven't had like a real final match yet. I think they've had some high profile matches, but not like the final match yet.
Okay. Yeah. That's very possible.
I don't know. Maybe they did. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a crazy month.
It was a crazy month.
That's a year's worth of headlines, but in just one month. And things are going to get crazier.
Yeah. And then February, July. That's like one of the most important months in pro wrestling since like 1984.
Yep.
You know, with WrestleMania or when Vince McMahon took over and when the territories started to die because Vince McMahon went national. Probably when you look at 2022, that's probably the most important year since 1984. So
yeah,
there's a lot to cover. And January was jam packed, and I can't even imagine February or April, July, even this month. There's been a lot of stuff going down. So like, it's crazy.
Never ends. Tell people where they can hear you. I know you have a brand new kind of reviving some interest in your video podcast as well. Tell people they can read you, feel you, take you in. Everything is Brian Rose. The floor is yours.
Okay, I am on Twitter at BR26. You can follow me. I'm verified as of this moment. I probably won't be soon. Yep. I'm on YouTube. I don't know what the link to my YouTube is, which isn't encouraging, but I'll put on my Twitter account so people can subscribe to it. I'm working on a show called The Grap Up with Mark Robinson, and we cover each month, kind of like this show. Maybe I didn't get the idea. I didn't propose the idea. He proposed it to me, and I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So yeah, what we do each month is after a month, we go and we talk about everything that happened that month. And we will do that for each month. And we are doing, I think we're also going to do a end of the year awards podcast. Probably not this month, but probably next month. So we have a lot to talk about. And we'll even do a wrap up show where we just talk about the biggest stories of 2022, because there's a lot of big stories that happened in 2022. So you can follow me on there. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel and all that will be there. I might even stream some stuff. I don't know. Let's see.
How about Twitch?
Twitch, I am at BR26. I will try a stream. There's games coming out soon I want to stream. It's just a matter of, you know, setting up my system and making sure my audio is okay. So it's, I'm working on it. I'm working on my Twitch. But yeah, follow me on there at BR26 too, because stuff probably is coming up.
Mm, always is. And I was going to read you on WrestlingObserver.com because the news never stops 24/7.
Yeah.
Middle of the night. 24/7. First thing in the morning.
There's probably some stuff coming out as we were talking about, as we were talking here. So
probably some
big always hit. Something.
Brian Rose, thanks so much for returning the show, and happy January 2022 or something like that. All right. Big thanks to all you for hanging out. Big thanks to Brian Rose for stopping by. And that was a fun look back at January 2022. We're going to look ahead to February 2022 and likely March some point this week. Also have a very special guest joining me on Monday. That one's already in the can, and that'll be it'll be a fun episode and a look back to something that happened 5 years ago. I'll put it that way. But yeah, these are always fun to do, and looking forward to celebrating the year that was pro wrestling with you, the dear listener. And then this weekend, I am off to Full Gear, my first ever AEW pay-per-view. And I think it is my first pay-per-view since Google searching here. I think my first pay-per-view since May 2005. My God, so long ago. That, of course, would be Backlash, which emanated from the beautiful Verizon Wireless Arena in Manchester, New Hampshire, where I used to spend a lot of my time working for the hockey team there. But yeah, that was Backlash 2005. I think that was my last pay-per-view. I've not been to a WWE one since then. Yeah, I've never been to an AEW one. And of course, you know, putting all the UFC stuff aside, yeah, I've been my first since 2005. God, that's crazy to think about. Let me just look at this card real quick. It's funny. I don't remember really any of this. This was when Batista defeating Triple H to retain the WWE World Title. Hulk Hogan team with Shawn Michaels against Daivari and Muhammad Hassan. I do remember that. Kane defeating Viscera. Edge taking on Chris Benoit in a Last Man Standing match. Hurricane and Rosie winning a tag team turmoil match to win the tag team titles. WWE Intercontinental Champion Shelton Benjamin defeating Chris Jericho to retain, and Tyson Tomko defeating Val Venus. I remember virtually none of this whatsoever. Yeah, 2005. God, this is such a long time ago. Anyway, so I'm heading to Full Gear. Very excited about that going on Friday. So I'll be there for Rampage. And yeah, it's a Newark, New Jersey. It's a quick flight, very relatively inexpensive trip compared to, you know, going to Chicago or Vegas or something like that. So yeah, looking forward to it, and looking forward to, I'm covering it for the website, covering it in the sense of I'm working. So yeah, should be good. I'm going to hope the post event press conference, I assume they're having that, and that'll be obviously quite notable considering the last one. But yeah, should be a good time, and more on that later on this week. But I'm going to have a lot of other content coming out this week, a lot of our shows, but I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine guests here on WrestlingObserver.com. The Year in Review series has begun. Got a lot more to go. Till next time, insert catchphrase here.